Hey, it's Tracy Burns. Welcome to Wine on the Street. We are legitimately on the street today. Well, we're looking at the street. We are at the bar at Print, which is a restaurant in the Inc. 48 Hotel, Midtown West in Manhattan. I am here. I have the pleasure of being here with winemaker Georgetta Dane, now winemaker at Chloe Wines.
Right.
The label is so Audrey Hepburn to me. We're going to talk about how you all that in a minute. But we have to first talk about how you got from Romania to California, Napa Valley.
Sure.
Who does that? Because when my family came over from Sicily, in all places they landed was Jersey.
Well, the story is, so first of all, I was born in Romania, and that's where I lived the first 30 years of my life, and that's where I graduated food science with a master in fermentation. So right
from
after...
From college in Romania?
Yes.
Okay.
And right after I graduated, so that was 1992, I was offered two jobs. One was a meat factory, the other was in as being a winemaker. So now keep in mind that 1992 was just a few years after Ceausescu era. So the country was still very starving, you know, the economy was still really bad, and, you know, my parents, when they first heard that I was offered a job in a meat factory, was, yeah, that's food. Do you know what that means? That means
that's secure, too, probably.
That means your family has food, you have connections. So they say, all right, good girl, get the job. Well, I just haven't seen myself making sausages for the rest of my life, you know. So
good for you.
They've been so disappointed that I picked the winemaking job. I will always remember, you know, my mother just looking at me, didn't say a word, but you know that those eyes that say, "Really, girl, that's how you make life decisions." So that's how it started.
But you are a rarity then to follow your heart in Romania at a time when people just wanted a job.
And at the time when being a woman winemaker, that's 23 years ago, wasn't a very popular thing, really. That was a man world.
Now, Romania, they were making wine in Romania.
Yes.
So you then went to make wine in Romania with a bunch of men.
That's how I started, with a bunch of men, big communist factory that was making big volumes of wine, pretty much. It was dry white, dry red, but what I learned there and helped me so much on my way, I learned old world winemaking, and I learned to work with all those eclectic varietals, and that helped me so much when I landed here.
What many people don't realize are the hundreds and thousands, I certainly don't even realize that how many different grapes there are out there.
Oh, yes.
Right? We just presume, you know, you have here Chardonnay, Cabernet, I mean, but there's thousands.
Well, I probably can say that here in the United States, I work with 42 different varietals of grapes.
Wow.
42 different types.
And how many indigenous grapes are there to Romania? So how many grapes are strictly in Romania? Do you know?
Not that many. So we do have the noble grapes, you know, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Cabernet. There are some native ones that are pretty famous, like Fetasca Alba, Fetasca Nagra. But... it was a point when during the communism where a lot of these noble grapes disappear because we are working for a big yields volume. A lot of the vineyards became a hybrid, so they weren't, you know, pure varietal anymore.
So then, if I read correctly, you guys just kind of one day said, let's apply for our green cards and see what happens.
Well, the story is a little different than that. The story started in 1998 when my husband was outside with his friends having a few beers, and one of them have this form for visa lottery for United States. And they all were, well, man, what's that? So let's all apply. And they applied, and after one few many beers, forgot completely about it, you know, that was... And... 8 months later, I receive at home a big yellow envelope from the United States of America Embassy. So I was like, why would I get from United States, you know, any mail at all? And now imagine my surprise when I open it and it's there, congratulations, you won the green card for United States. I almost had a heart attack. I was like, how that happened? That must be a mistake. Now, my husband was as surprised at me as I said, but then he thought a little, said, you know what, I might have an idea about this. I might think, you know what, remember that night? So, but he said, what were the chances? Like, right, one in a million. I never thought it would happen.
Right.
So we were both so thrilled, you know, so thrilled. We won the green card for the United States, but God, so unprepared for what was to come, because neither one of us was speaking English at that time, not one word. Well, maybe yes or no, that's it. Then our daughter was 1 month old.
Oh my goodness.
We were building a house. We were in process of building a house. We had jobs. We had a life, you know. So immigrating was really, really not in the future plans.
Right.
So after a debate, you know, back and forth, what should we do, what should we do? He finally said, you know what, we won a lottery. That's a sign of luck. Let's go ahead. Let's
do it. That's God. God wants you to go.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's
good for you.
And didn't know anyone in the United States. So a friend of a friend said, we know someone in Monterey, a Romanian. He's teacher in a high school. So he's a very nice guy, might help you guys, you know, show you around, teach you a few things, how what to do there. And that's how I landed in Monterey.
So if, I misspoke, yeah. I said Napa, it was Monterey you landed.
Monterey County, because if that friend would have lived in Alaska,
you would have been there.
I'll be there, not making wine, not making the wine, God knows what. Maybe sausages.
Yes, or salmon, fishing for salmon or something. Yeah. So you land in Monterey, but yes, you have this wine background.
I did. And here is luck coming again in my life. Kendall Jackson was building a brand new winery in Monterey, new. And they needed full crew. So they were hiring winemaking, cellar, laboratory. So my husband got a job right away as working in the cellar, as a cellar rat, as we call it. And I had a chance to get a job in the lab. And thank God we weren't speaking English, but chemistry is a universal language.
Yes.
So I didn't need, you know, too many words. I knew chemistry, I knew winemaking. And then, you know, within months, as we start picking on the language, we both been promoted, enologist, assistant winemaker. So now it's been 17, 18 years since I've been in the United States. And I'm about at my fourth brand.
Your fourth. But first of all, what a testament to getting an education. For those out there who are thinking about maybe not going to college, that education came in handy for you big time.
Oh, absolutely.
Big time, right?
Absolutely.
You get there, you go from Kendall Jackson, and three vineyards later, you end up at Chloe.
Yes.
When did you first become head winemaker, though? Before Chloe, right?
Right after Kendall Jackson. The next job was with Golden State Vintners, and that's where I became winemaker.
And then you went on to work for
The wine group. My third employee and last one. I'm still with the wine group.
So now the wine group does a bunch of different.
Mm-hmm.
And you, Chloe's your baby.
My latest one, yes. We launched it 2 years ago. We started with a Pinot Grigio, Chardonnay, and a red blend. And then this year in February added to the collection a Pinot Noir. And now in September it's going to be a new addition, a Prosecco.
Really?
Yes.
So now, let's talk about Chloe, first of all. Okay, the name?
Yes, the name, when we created Chloe 2 years ago, it was winemaking, marketing, sitting at a table, you know, and we said, okay, let's start with why people drink wine.
Yes.
Right? So, people drink wine to create and capture beautiful moments in their lives. People drink wine to celebrate. So they were, okay, as winemaker, how would you make that wine, the perfect wine for a celebration, the perfect wine to capture, to create beautiful moments? So I said that wine has to be timeless, elegant, and classic. That's why I went for the grapes all around the world, as you can see. I went to the most prized vineyards, to some of the most preeminent growing regions. The Pinot Grigio is from Val d'Adige in Italy. The Chardonnay is Russian River Valley in Sonoma County. Pinot Noir, Monterey County, and a little Russian River. Prosecco is from Valdo Biadene and Conegliano.
Italy.
Italy.
So the wine group basically came to you and said, we want you to come up with a new label, and kind of said, you have carte blanche to do it however you want?
It was a group decision. It was just me. So as I said, it was ideas between marketing and winemaking.
But you made the decision to say, we're not taking the grapes from local. We're going to get them.
Exactly. We go exact to the source where is the best grapes for that particular wine. So it's like where you get the best Pinot Grigio in the world today, if you under. So that yeah. would be in Val d'Adige,
then
in Italy.
Right. So then you send the grapes back here?
No.
And you make the wine
The wine
here.
Is made there under my there. Supervision, and the wine comes here already in... already bottled, like Prosecco. That has to be bottled there. Otherwise, you know,
right,
you'd lose the...
right, the bubbles.
The bubbles.
So you are in Italy then a lot?
Yes, I go see the vineyards, but I do work very close with the team there that, I trust, and they are wonderful professionals. And they send me a lot of samples that I taste, and then I said, yeah, that's the style I want. We go with that, so...
And are you able to taste it after? I mean, does the taste change when it takes a plane ride over?
No.
Really. You don't worry about that then?
No, not really.
I think it's so interesting.
Not within 1 week or within days.
I suppose. I think it's interesting because so many people are buying land, growing grapes on the land, and making wine from that piece of land.
Sure. That's a great way to do it.
But to me, it almost sounds like a better way to do it is to go to where...
The source of the
yes.
best.
Yes.
The source of the best.
Okay, so, and we're going to put pictures up. You have to see her nails. Your nails match the wine label, as does her outfit. It's so beautiful and so perfect. I love it. Put the little bow on your nails. God bless
you,
manicurist.
Thank you.
So, this must be, I mean, you must wake up every day and thank God, because you're doing this.
What I love.
Right.
Yes.
And you're creating your own vision.
I know.
Okay, so, may we start to taste? Because I do want to hear about, first of all, this red number 249.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing that it comes literally from 249...
Barrel lots. Yes.
So let's... Okay, so you tell me. What do you want to start with?
You were asking me about the name, and I didn't say Chloe. It means in Greek, blooming.
Ah.
And the way I see it, you have... these exceptional grapes that transform in iconic wines with beautiful flavors and aromatics. So it's a metaphor, practically. It's a metaphor we choose
it's great.
For the label.
Not to mention...
Now, about the label, black and white, you know, the label is supposed to prepare the consumer for the experience it's going to follow. It's an echo of what you're going to find in the bottle. So the aesthetics, we got inspired from the iconic beauties of our times. Yes, you're right. Audrey Hepburn, mm-hmm. Grace Kelly, Jackie Onassis. That's why simple white and a black ribbon.
Now, may I ask, are you trying to gear towards the female consumer?
Initially, we wanted our brand, this brand, to be very feminine, but
yes.
also bold and confident. Another goal was to pop on the shelf,
mm-hmm.
to look more expensive than it actually is. That's a bottle of $17.
Which is something we should talk about too. The price point on these wines is amazing. So how do you do that when you have to ship it from Italy? I mean, I know there's costs involved with getting the wine here from Italy, hiring
mm-hmm.
the crew over there. That alone is enough to jack the price up.
Well, we learned a few secrets along the way. Secrets that are worth keeping. So
good for you. Well, good for you then. Okay, so what was the first one? Not the Chard?
The first one is Pinot Grigio.
It was the Pinot Grigio, okay.
Yes.
And then?
The Pinot Grigio is from Val d'Adige, as I said. It was fermented in stainless steel, 100%. We use a screw cap to maximize the freshness. And it is a very beautiful classic Pinot Grigio. The nose is very fresh and citrus. It feels... with beautiful aromatics, and that aromatic nose is going to lead you into a fruit-forward palate. With first time I taste it, always I get flavors of Meyer lemons. There is some ripe peach, some floral notes, honeysuckle. Low alcohol, only 12.5%.
And that's the beauty of Pinot Grigio. You can drink it all day, basically.
Yeah. Very refreshing, wonderful for this weather.
Wonderful
right
for
now
the
in
summer.
New York.
Pinot Grigio
yes.
got a bad name for a while. And I think it's slowly starting to come back. People are starting to realize just what a fabulous, versatile wine it is.
I love Pinot Grigio.
I do too. Oh, I could drink it all day.
Summer is one of my favorites. Pinot Grigio and Albarino are two wines that I always drink.
Okay, and then your next white is the Chardonnay.
The next is Chardonnay.
So now, okay, you have all these secrets. You're not going to tell me how you keep the price down. But the notion of marketing to women. So to me, this is super classy as opposed to, and absolutely no offense to there's bottles out there that have little cartoon characters on them, and they're like very, there should be fun girls' night out kind of bottles. I don't think it makes the consumer think that there's anything fantastic in the bottle, though.
I know, yeah, I know.
And you don't have to comment on that. That was all my words. Okay, so this is your Chardonnay. This is from
Russian River Valley.
Oh, man, you can smell that already. So the color is beautiful.
We fermented, the wine was fermented in French and American barrels, then was aged in barrels. So many years ago when I started making wine, I had to come with philosophy about how to blend the wine. You know, making wine is a combination of science and art, right? It's all scientific. The moment you pick the grapes, then all the fermentation.
I think it's so scientific.
Yeah, oh my goodness. There's math, there is chemistry involved, there is logistics and so. But once the harvest is done in January and it starts the blending process, to me that's the most beautiful part of the entire winemaking. To me that's art. So as I was saying many years ago, I had to come with philosophy, how I'm going to make a blend. And I realized that in every component it's like I have essential oils and I could blend them just the way that they do perfume. So I studied, and it turns out when you blend essential oils, you create a base, you add middle notes and top notes. And that became the way I blend ever since. So this blend, my base was all the wine that was fermented and aged in barrels. Because it's rich, it's creamy, it's got those buttery notes, vanilla
I totally
notes.
Taste the creamy. But what's so interesting to me is at this price point, the wine is still, I still taste it. Long time ago, I took a few of the infamous Kevin Zarelli's wine classes. And one of the things that he would make us do is really try to feel and sense how long that taste stays in your mouth.
How long is the finish?
How long is the finish? And that's long.
Well, that's our goal as a winemaker. When you have that long, lingering finish, that's yes.
That's amazing. Good job. You did a great
job. I did a good job.
And it's under $20.
Yes.
How much is this bottle retail?
Well, we suggest 17, but you'll find it probably at less, probably between 14 and 17 in stores. Depends if they have discounts or so. So sometimes you'll find it for $14. Yes, and that's a Russian River Chardonnay.
And I love
fermented in French barrels.
Right, and you can taste everything about it. And while we asked for a spit bucket, I have yet to use it because that's too good to spit out. That's amazing.
The top note of this perfume, I kept only about 10% of portion, and I fermented it in tanks, in stainless steel, long time, a very cold temperature to preserve the fruit. And that, you know, in a perfume, top note is something you smell right away, but it's not supposed to last.
Yes.
Well, that made that very fruity, gave that citrusy pear, apple notes to my blend. When I added that, it really, you know, twisted the entire thing. How should I put it? It made it feel alive. Suddenly, it brought life to the entire
blend. The apple. I find that, but that's the part that I find so fascinating and so scientific about it, is that it's a big formula, and you change the variables one little bit, and it changes
everything changes. Yes.
Right?
Yes, you're right.
It's so, I mean, I'm still, after all these years, dumbfounded by people like yourself who can pull this off.
So when I start blending, I usually start on a Monday. And just like any artist, you know, you have a you know how to blend it. You know what goes with what. So I make about 5 different versions, and I let them all the way through Friday, and I taste them every day. Well, you won't believe how much they change from Monday to Friday. They develop, they marry there, they combine.
Wow.
So by the end of Friday, from the 5 that I swear I love them all, only 2 I like at the very end, because they change so much.
Now,
they evolve.
We are wonderful, thank you. We were getting checked in on, that's okay. May I ask, you're saying blending, though. What are you blending? You're blending 100% Chardonnay from all different...
Chardonnay, so can be different appellations. I sometimes combine...
But this bottle
Monterey
is...
Monterey with Russian River or with the Santa Barbara. Sometimes I combine barrel fermented with tank fermented. So as I said, each one gives me a different profile. So the thing is, when you combine so many different types, even if it's all Chardonnay, you are able to make layers,
make
the wine complex.
So just to be clear, this is 100% Chardonnay from all over the place.
No, it's all Russian River.
It's all Russian River Valley,
but fermented in barrels and fermented in tanks. So that's what gives it complexity and makes it different.
Who do you get the grapes from then?
We do have contracts, long-term contracts, with the vineyards in Sonoma County.
So do you... Are there any Chloe vineyards out there?
Not right now. Not as much as we would like to. We are in the process of getting vineyards.
This seems like a very efficient way, though, to make wine without the overhead of the vineyards. I'm putting my little business hat on for a second, but isn't it, though?
It is. Now, there is a downside. If the brand starts growing very fast, you know, then yes, you need...
You need more.
You need more.
How many cases a year are you producing now?
Okay, let me put it this way. Today, we are on pace... The Chloe is on pace for doubling its depletions this year. And that does not include the Prosecco.
Because that's not even out yet.
That's not even available yet. Doubled its depletions already. So we are very proud. The brand is doing wonderfully since we launched it two years ago.
Okay, so I should dump, otherwise I'm going to finish this. So we can move on. So now, may I ask, you know, I presume the goal is to continue to grow the wine. How are you distributing it now? Can I go to a wine store and pick it up?
It's nationwide distributed. You probably all find it any fancy wine store here in New York.
And of course the website.
Okay. Yes.
Okay,
easy
so
to find.
Let's move on. You tell me what's next.
Next would be the Pinot Noir.
I love that Pinot Noir is back in vogue and that everyone's drinking it and making it.
That's been for a while.
I know, and it is my favorite. Come September, I could drink Pinot Noir every day. And I probably will.
Well, as you see, this is the elegant type of Pinot Noir. It's the classic style of Pinot Noir.
Yes, it is.
Not over-extracted, not over-tannic. I really wanted to make a Pinot Noir that would fit with the entire collection, something elegant, classic, and timeless. I sourced the grapes from Monterey, 90%, and 10 from Russian River. So the grapes from Monterey, as you see, delivers all that raspberries, strawberries, cherry fruit, has that natural juiciness. The Russian River, even if I use only 10%, it brought complexity and spiciness to the blend. And what I really like, there is that flavor of fresh torn spearmint leaves.
Spearmint leaves?
Yes, try.
It smells fantastic, and the color is light and pretty. It has that, like, that orangey red about it.
Well, when the goal is to make a really fruit-forward Pinot Noir, the entire winemaking has to be led a little bit different. So mostly winemakers ferment warm, because at warmer temperatures you get tannin extraction, you get color extraction. So we, you know, even myself, when I have a... Well, that's my focus. I go for warmer temperatures. For this one, though, I ferment it cold. and I'll explain you why. So I started with a cold soak over 2 days at 50 degrees, and then my fermentation started at 60.
Cold soak meaning the grapes are cold or soaked?
Are kept cold, are cold temperature.
In cold
that's
water?
When you, that's, no, within in their juice.
In their own juice,
acidic,
okay.
Acqua solution. That's when you get color extraction. In acidic and aqua solution, you do get color extraction. So I started the fermentation at 60, and I increased it about 5 degrees every other day, but never went above 70. So with that, the fermentation is slow, and you trap all the fruit in. When the fermentation is hot, it can become tumultuous, so our vessels are open. You lose a lot of those volatiles, a lot of fruit goes in the air. You do get color, you get tannins, but you lose fruit. And I didn't want that to happen with the Pinot Noir, so I want to trap as much fruit as possible.
Why don't more people do this then?
As I said, because some like their Pinot really tannic and really extracted, but they lose fruit. That's what's happening.
Well, because I guess there are still enough people out there that don't like these fruit-forward wines, and so they're, I guess, appealing to that taste.
To darker,
yeah.
Darker Pinot Noirs. Yeah.
Yeah. See, but to me, you can drink this.
Well, I think that's... You know, in my opinion, that's Pinot Noir should be. Pinot Noir should be, you know, feminine,
yes,
delicate.
I love it. But I also think that's why Pinot Noir sometimes gets a bad name, because it is feminine, and, you know, people with too much testosterone don't want to touch it.
Yes, but then you can have a Cabernet or a Syrah instead, right? That's why
wines have to be
different.
I mean,
know?
That's the beauty of the wine.
You
world.
Like big wines, you have a Petit Syrah.
That's fine. I think that's the beauty of the wine world. There's something for everyone and then some.
And there is another thing. You know, as a winemaker, I always want to... I'm an advocate for the grape itself. So I want the fruit come to shore. I want terroir to express. I restrain on oak. This wine was aged in French oak, but no more than 4-6 months. Because oak has to come as a secondary presence. Always, you have to, you know, you have to taste the Pinot Noir
the grape.
Period. Yes.
And this is from Russian River Valley.
And Monterey County.
And Monterey, your homeland. Where are you from?
Yes, right there.
Now your home address, I should say. Are you still in Monterey County?
Yes, I landed there 18 years ago, still there. And why would I leave? It's such a beautiful place.
It is stunningly
amazing.
Beautiful. And they are making some amazing wines too now.
Yeah, we have plenty of vineyards in Monterey.
And your daughter now must be 18.
She's 18, out of house probably within 2 weeks. She
Whoa.
Is going to go to UC San Diego majoring biochemistry.
Wow.
Yeah, time flew.
Like her mama. Good for her. Okay, so this is the 2013 Pinot we just had. Again, and the price point on that?
The same. Well, the entire line is $17. Everything.
How?
Pinot, Chardonnay, Prosecco, Pinot Grigio.
Was that part of the goal?
17.
Part
it
of
keeps,
the goal to
keeps
keep...
it simple. Keeps it simple.
But was the goal to be at that price point? Because I know, like, there are many winemakers out there that have to make that decision, right? Do you do the high end?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to be the high end? Who would you consider high end? I guess Camus, Silver Oak. Those are expensive
wines.
Yeah, okay.
Many.
Or am I going to be uber cheap, like mm-hmm. Yellowtail? Or do I try to fit in somewhere in between?
Well, we try to make great wines, make sure we over-deliver for the price. I think these days, this segment between, let's say, 15-20 is very popular
very
fast-growing right now.
It sure is.
Yes.
And that's the question I get all the time. Give me a great wine under $25. 20 or 20. It's 25 often that people will say, and that's probably because it's Manhattan. Give me a great wine under $25. Everyone wants to know. Because people, maybe they do have these fancy wine cellars, but they can't afford to drink that stuff every night.
I agree.
Okay, now this one intrigues me. This is, so you call this red number 249.
That's red 249, and its name came because it took me 249 barrel lots to taste until I came with this blend.
No
it's
way.
It's a blend of Syrah, Petit Syrah, Petit Verdot, Cabernet Merlot, and Zinfandel. And I sourced the grapes from Napa Valley, Sonoma Valley, Lake County, Mendocino County, and the Zinfandel is from Lodi.
How do you keep track of 249 anything?
Well, I'm pretty busy, honestly.
You got a serious notebook full of notes there. Okay, so this is how many different grapes at the end?
Only six lots made the cut. From 249 tasted, only six made the cut. And that's what's in your glass right now.
Really? And so I'm going to read this because there was no way I could memorize this. So it's Syrah, Merlot, Petite Syrah, Zinfandel, Petite Verdot, and Cab.
Yes.
The Petite Verdot always interests me. I feel like that's like the salt you throw on your steak at the end of the day. Like, it's just a little bit of Petite Verdot.
I love Petite Verdot. I would love it by itself.
Talk about a big wine.
Yeah.
It's big.
So it's Petit Syrah and Syrah. So
yes,
again, as I make my wines as a perfume, for this one, my base was Petit Syrah, Syrah, and Petit Verdot because our varietals, just as you said, they are big, bold, muscular, tannic. So they made the skeleton of my blend. Then middle notes was Cabernet and Merlot, and top note was Zinfandel because that's so insanely fruity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you wanted this to be a big wine.
I wanted it to be a big. What I did not want is to be a sweet blend.
Uh-huh, and it's not?
No.
Not at
not
all.
Acid. There is some residual sugar below your threshold. It shouldn't feel like it is a sweet wine. So that's a wine complex with
it's
the flavors.
It's smooth, though, considering there's so many different things going on.
It's a wine that should go great with a steak, with lamb, with any kind of red meat. So. With flavors of blackberries, blueberries, cranberries. There are layers of complexity because that's when you blend so many varietals, each one brings something to the party. It's what creates complexity.
But it's, again, and this is still me being very naive in the wine world, I am blown away at how you guys are scientists because you change one little piece of the formula, the whole thing changes.
The entire wine changes.
The entire wine changes.
Sometimes 1% of something else makes a big difference.
We can 1% of Petit Verdot would totally make a difference.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Absolutely. I mean, I'm telling you, it's like salt on your steak. It's either with...
Suddenly you get more color, you know, adding more Petit Verdot.
And the color on this is so pretty. This is... I'm blown away here.
Thank you. Again, aged on
$17. Come on now.
Aged on oak, about 6 months.
Okay, so we have one more.
Our last is
whoops,
Prosecco.
Which?
I let it last because it's the sweetest of them all.
And for all of you listening out there, we popped the cork.
Yeah.
Sort of kind of earlier.
It popped itself.
It sort of did pop itself, but I just think that's God saying you have to drink it.
Our Prosecco was in a hurry. He wanted to taste it.
I think that's God. He wants you to taste quickly.
So for this Prosecco, we sourced the grapes from Valdobbiadene and Conegliano. That's in the neighborhood of Treviso, about... 1 hour and a half north from Venice, and the vineyards are protected in north by the Alps Mountains and south Adriatic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
The vineyard is very steep. Everything has to be, you cannot do any mechanical work. Everything is picked by hand. All the work is done by hand.
And why is that? Is that law, or is it because it's on hills?
It's very
on hills.
Steep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on hills. We pick the grapes second week of September, about at 17 breaks, and that's when we start the first fermentation. So the wine was made by Charma method, which means...
Charma? Is that
Charma?
What you said? Okay.
That's two fermentations. So one is we make a dry wine, and then... keep separate some of the juice, very cold at 0 degrees, that is used for the secondary fermentation. So when we start the secondary fermentation, move some of that juice, sweet juice, we call it muté.
Yeah.
We add it to the dry wine and start the secondary in a tank that is under pressure. We call it autoclave, so pressurized tanks, and that's what captures, keeps in, traps in all the carbon dioxide.
And this is all done in Italy?
all done in Italy, bottled in Italy. There is no other way, you know, way to bring it here and still have the bubbles.
Right, or it'll pop like it just did.
There is a trick. The longer you keep the secondary fermentation and the colder, the small is the bubbles. So we made sure the secondary fermentation was long.
So we want. Why do we want small bubbles?
Because that's high quality Prosecco. When the bubbles are small.
So I'm tasting. Oh, that's so nice. Now, why do a Prosecco?
Why a Prosecco?
Yeah.
Because it's a lovely wine. I'm a big fan of Prosecco wines, period. I really wanted that in.
I am too.
And I thought it would fit perfectly in our collection.
Yes, because there are, and not to keep dwelling on the women aspect, but many women will reach for a bottle
However,
of Prosecco.
However, I want it different that Prosecco is outside there. All the Proseccos right now are sweet Proseccos. They have about 25 grams per liter residual sugar. That makes them, make people have them more with dessert.
Yeah.
This is just 15 grams per liter, so it's a way drier Prosecco.
It feels
more refreshing. So it's a Prosecco you can have the beginning of the meal, or you know,
or
even
with
a meal. Or with a meal. That was the difference.
Less sugar, too, then makes it better, easier to eat with use with sushi, things like
exactly.
that.
It's a
very popular varietal, though, these days, isn't it? People are drinking a lot of
Prosecco. People love it, yeah. People love Prosecco.
You know, I grew up Italian. I'm Sicilian, and we drank it growing up, and it was always called the poor man's champagne.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it has that moniker anymore. I think people genuinely choose Prosecco, even sometimes over champagne. It tastes different.
Absolutely loves. It's fruitier, it's more refreshing. Champagne is, because it's done in bottles.
This is
the
so
second
nice.
Fermentation is not done in tanks, right? The big volume is done in bottles. So practically each bottle is
it's like
a tank. It's its own. So it feels a little more, how to say, the taste is different. A little more nutty, a little more yeasty, you know, the champagne.
Yeah.
If you... Personally, I prefer the fruitier style, so I'm a big fan of sparkling wines.
Yeah, I am too. And again, but I mean, I think they all have, like you were saying, a common thread to them. They're all very easy to drink. They all stand alone. They don't need food.
Absolutely.
Right? That was the point too, because again, there are many, many vineyards out there making wine to pair.
Mm-hmm.
These are standalones. You're talking to a single mother who opens wine when she gets home from work. I need a standalone sometimes. Well, many of us do, right? These are amazing wines, and they're all $18.
$17.
Even better. That's crazy. Georgetta, before I let you go, can you talk a little bit about where you see the wine industry, wine world going? We didn't really talk about you as a woman in the wine world, because you said from the onset it was nothing. It was not like there were walls or ceilings.
No, it wasn't a struggle for me. No, never. Not a struggle.
That's so amazing to hear, because that's 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
Many women can't say that about other industries. So that's another hat tip to the wine world. But where's it going? What's different? You know, the millennials are drinking wines. I know they're drinking sweeter wines.
Yeah. Well, honestly, you know, every year you see another trend coming. Trends come and go. But I still think that staying classic is always have a future. So I've been through sweet wines,
The Moscato,
wines with flavors, wines with mocha flavors, and everything. I did them all. Felt sad sometimes, you know, to make a flavored wine, because I, you know, as a winemaker, I always love the old world winemaking, the real.
From your Romanian roots.
Yes.
I think people do too, and like you said, I think the Moscatos come and go. I know Rosé is hot now, but that too, everyone at the end of the day comes back to Chardonnay.
What I see is more and more people enjoying wine, coming to enjoy wine, I definitely see. And I understand that sweet wines are so popular right now, because that's the entry level.
Yes.
That's how you learn about wine.
Yes.
And what I notice from sweet, they will eventually turn into whites or rosés. Mm-hmm. And after one point, once they grow through that, they were going to Reds. So, you know, I'm so happy to see them growing, watching them grow,
but you're
and
right,
learning
right?
about wine.
Someone had said to me once that it's, you know, that you go from drinking Sprite to drinking, I guess, Moscato.
Yes.
Which is an easy entry point.
Exactly.
But it's almost like who cares how you get in the wine world, just get in.
Absolutely.
It helps everybody.
Yeah. Someone that likes, you know, Sprite or a Coca-Cola goes straight into a strong red wine and that's a tough one.
It won't happen.
So it's normal. That's how you grow. So,
So then Moscato's doing a good thing for the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so are you. I think you are amazing and, God, you're a role model for a lot of people. You've done a lot that most Americans born in this country will never, ever do.
Well, thank you. I've been lucky, I guess.
No,
and
it's
a lot of hard work.
It's perseverance
and a lot
as
of
well.
Hard work.
All right, Georgetta, give us the website that where we can get the wines. It is ChloeWines.com?
ChloeWineCollection.com.
I'm sorry. Okay, so ChloeWineCollection.com, and of course people can find it.
Absolutely.
Hopefully
at
their local
stores. You can find in your neighborhood where there are the stores that sell.
Wonderful.
You just put the zip code and it's going to give you all the places where you can find the wine.
All right, so go buy a bottle of Chloe wine. I'm going to finish my Prosecco. And this is available in September.
September 1st, yeah, nationwide.
All right, go get it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Gentani.
You.